Please go ahead.
Thank you, Saba. Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. This is the PDP call on the 1st of September. And on the call, we have Alex Kukuru, James Bladel, David Maher, Alan Greenberg, and Paul Diaz. For staff, we have Marika Cornix, Margie Malam, and myself, Glenda Saint-Cherie. We have apologies from Wolf Ulrich Knoben, and I have nobody else down for apologies. Has anybody registered apologies from anybody? And from from Jeff Newman, of course. I am sorry. Can I remind you, please, to say your name for the transcription purposes before you speak? And thank you very much. Over to you, James.
Thank you, Glenn, and good morning or good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the second episode of the reconvening of this team, which I keep wanting to call the PPSC team, but it's not the PPSC team. So last week, just for those who, well, I see Avery and Alex both here, great. So we have a full complement of our usual suspects here, and we can continue with where we left off last week, which was a review of the public comments received. The only question I would have for the group before we dive in is, do we want to first just continue to press on with the comment review, or do we want to circle back and look at the text that Marika has proposed in response to our items from last week and give those just kind of a quick review and a thumbs up, thumbs down before we move on while they're fresh in our minds? So I think either approach is valid and has its, you know, benefits and drawbacks. Is there a preference by the group? Paul, go ahead.
Hi, James, it's Paul. For me, I'd prefer to keep cranking through since our group is still not necessarily all of the folks that are typically involved. If we just crank through, we can highlight the things that are missing and then go back to them. Hopefully when we have more people, once we get past the Labor Day holiday in the U.S., which is the traditional end of summer, hopefully we'll get everybody that's always been a regular participant at that point.
Okay, so crank through and then get them all at once at the end. And as far as attendance, I mean, this is actually pretty good if you look at our track record. So go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, I agree with Paul. I did note one thing that I think wasn't perfectly reflected, and I'll bring that one up. But other than that, I think we should go ahead with it.
Okay.
The one I'm talking about specifically is the IPC comment on whether the new rules lengthen or shorten the process. And What the comment says is, the workgroup notes the proposed PDP procedure in its view does not structurally increase or decrease the duration of an overall PDP, but does provide opportunities for streamlining, and keeps on going. And I think what we said is there's also the possibility of increase because we have added extra comment periods and things like that. So I think the comment should reflect that we have done things which could increase it and could decrease it, instead of just emphasizing just the streamlining, because I think we have gone in both directions. We don't know what the final result will be, but I think we need to own up to the fact that we did add steps to the procedure.
Okay. So, Marika, maybe you can just make a little note there, and we'll come back to that when we review all of the proposed responses.
Yeah, it doesn't work out. I can just update it in the next version.
Yeah, that's all I was asking.
Okay.
I don't want to debate wordsmithing on a call.
All right. Well, then it sounds like the consensus is to push forward from where we left off last week, which was, if I recall, on page 7, the second comment, or actually the only full comment that starts on page 7 of the document that's in the PDF. That jive with everyone's memory, or?
Yes, yeah. That's correct.
Okay, good. Okay, Marika, can you start us off with a comment there?
Yes, so this is Marika, so right to the number 14, the no fast track procedure. The first comment in relation to that recommendation is from INTA, and basically INTA says the work team should clarify what recommendations will enable the PDP to move more quickly. the development of a fast-track process now, rather than waiting for the GNSO to assess whether to create one later, would ensure greater efficiency and time in your decision-making. Do you want to take the second one together with that, or you prefer first to do this one and then go to the next one?
How closely are they related? I think, okay, let's just take them separately then.
Okay.
I think that this kind of feeds back to the question that Alan was mentioning, is that we have added some areas that would lengthen the time frame. We've added some areas that provide the opportunity to streamline but don't require it. What would those options be? What would those things that we've provided that would streamline the process? Maybe we should just go back and highlight those. I think one of them, for example, is we made one comment period optional because it was coming in between, sandwiched in between two other comment periods. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not sure we eliminated anything, but we, and maybe we did eliminate a mandatory comment period, I'm not sure, but we did do a lot of talking, and hopefully it shows up in the result of, by doing things in advance, you can save a lot of wasted time in the process. In other words, by thinking it through carefully and making sure that the task set is something that has been researched ahead of time, if applicable, and, you know, and the case is made. So that has the potential for not wasting time. I don't know how we don't know how it's going to play out. It's clearly, I don't think we did anything which can really be called fast track. I was one of the ones pushing heavily for it, and I think ultimately we stepped away from that and said it should be considered at some other point after we have more experience. So as you can see, my comment on this one is I agree in principle. That's why we talked so much about it, but the working group just couldn't come to closure on this and didn't feel it was a mandatory issue that we had to address before we could wrap this up and have a viable set of procedures for council.
Okay, thanks, Alan. I put myself in the queue because I remember just a couple of things on this subject. The first being that there was a comment period that was, I believe it was either mandatory or it was done as a matter of practice, that was coming on the heels of another comment period, and we may have pointed out that was an optional comment period, which shaved some time out of at least the critical path for PDP. The second item was that we had formalized some things that were informally occurring, and like you said, invested some time in the front end of the process to ensure that the working group's efforts didn't bog down in the middle of the process. And I'm thinking here, for example, of the charter and all the work that we did relative to the development of the charter. And the third thing was, and I think this was the point that Aubrey made that really stuck with me during the course of the PDP, was that if there is a clear recipe or procedure for a fast-track PDP, then why aren't all PDPs fast-tracked? And so I think that's kind of addresses this question in a backhanded sort of way, is that we didn't propose a fast-track PDP because if there was something that could streamline the whole process entirely, we didn't see why it couldn't be applied to all PDPs. So those were the three elements I remember in this area, but I'll go to Aubrey next and then Margie.
Yeah, thank you. This is Aubrey. I think part of that last one, I think there is something we talked about, and not having read the book recently enough for it to be in my memory, I think that was that if you keep your topic narrow and if your charter process has defined a single work item, then you can streamline your way through it. You've done the proper analysis up front. You've got a tight charter. You've got one work item. You know, you can get through it quickly. If your charter is to boil the ocean, then it's going to take a while to do. And I think that's part of the answer with everything else that's already been said.
Right, that's a good point. Scope management and, you know, keeping it specific and Actually, well, it's good. Thanks. I had forgotten that one. Margie, you're up next.
Yeah, I just wanted to remind you guys of that. One of the places where we did add time was in the notion of doing a preliminary issue report, public comment, and then final issue report, which is the process that we're following for the UDRP issue report that I'm going to be delivering in a few weeks. And now having done that in this kind of a test issue, it does take a lot of time. I hope that the end product is something that is more thorough, more thought out, and has, reflects the community input. But that's kind of one area that pops to mind as to what may have lengthened the process. Because even the getting to the vote, for example, we've added that extra step of two reports and a preliminary final and a comment period. And so if there is ever a discussion about streamlining it or making it shorter, you might give the council an option to just go straight to final issue report. But I personally think that the end product is going to be better because it does include the public comment period. So I wouldn't want to, go back to the old practice, but just point out that that's where there is additional time.
Okay, so that's an area where we've lengthened the time period.
Correct.
In a new practice. Okay. So maybe that could be mentioned for number 14, but I think more that more applies to the previous discussion we were having about which items we've changed that could possibly lengthen the process.
Can I comment?
Yeah, Aubrey and Alan, and then if anybody else wants to chime in on this, we should probably close the queue there. Go ahead, Aubrey.
Yeah, I would actually note that that's one of the things, though, while it may appear to lengthen the time before we actually start the PDP, that is one of the an extra month spent there is the intention. Obviously, we have to see if it works. The intention of that was to keep a working group from wandering in the wilderness for a year. That takes a little bit more time. It's kind of like, the standard engineering thing of, I better get down to coding now because I don't want to waste time planning. And all evidence shows that an extra bit of time in planning and in understanding what you're going to do actually speeds things up. Now, it remains to be seen if that's truly the case in ICANN, because ICANN can be counterpredictive. But the intent of that was to speed things up, not to slow things down. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely agree. That was kind of meant to be a down payment on the actual work of the working group. So we did do a lot of things to front load that effort into the planning phases. Alan, you're up next.
Yeah, two very brief comments. With respect to Avery's last comment, it does have the potential for speeding up the overall process, but I think our intention was not necessarily to make it faster, but to make it better. And to make sure the issues report really addresses the issue that was brought up, I think is a rather crucial one, even if it takes more time. In terms of what Margie said, I think in any answer we need to be careful about differentiating between things we've added to the process and things we've put into the rules, which we have been doing in practice anyway. So, the bylaws say an issues report has to come out in 2 weeks and the council has to vote on it within 2 weeks. Well, in recent times, issues reports didn't come out in 2 weeks, and council rarely or never voted on it within the time frame allowed. So in some cases, we've simply been pragmatic and put into the rules what really happens. Other cases, such as the extra comment period, we have added it. But I think when we're talking about the things that we've done in the rules to lengthen things, we need to make sure that it's clear that not all of them really lengthen the reality. They just lengthen the rules. So, just too
okay, thanks, Alan. I think that's a good point. That some of these things were already being done, so it may just be giving the appearance that we're lengthening it when, in fact, we're just kind of codifying things that were already there.
Right.
Do we have enough on this issue, folks, to move on to the second half? I think that's more than enough fodder for a response. But just to recap here, I don't know if I can recap, trusting my memory, but I think if we look at the transcript, there's at least five different items, five different points that we've made on this first half of this topic about what we've done for the timeline. And Alan, I just wanted to keep us moving here. If we could move on to the second paragraph.
Yeah, I just want to point out that in my short comment I put there, I did emphasize the thing that we spent an awful lot of time talking about this over the last 2 years. Therefore, we thought it was important also, but we couldn't come up with a viable way to do it that we thought would help the process.
Right. I agree. So the next one says, the concept of monitoring outcomes needs to have an accompanying method to make corrections to a policy if a policy is not working as originally intended, without having to go through the full PDP process. Once the new PDP is implemented, the GNSO Council should charter small groups to propose such a change and should not wait until the full review of the PDP takes place. I see Avery putting her hand up, and I'll put my hand in the queue. And I think this is somewhat novel of a topic compared to some of the other things we have. So go ahead, Avery.
I guess I'm not quite sure. Are they talking about, and so this is partly a question on my part, that it should be possible to modify the PDP process without having to go through a PDP for the PDP, or are they talking about modifying the outcome of any random PDP?
I'm not clear on that either.
For the record, the they is me.
Oh, okay, this is your comment?
Yes.
Oh, I thought this was the intercomment. I guess. Oh, second column is us?
No. I submitted a comment to the in the comment period.
Oh, okay. So that's right. It's AG. I thought it was still an Inta one. So can you explain then? Sorry. I thought I was talking about they Inta. I apologize.
Sure. I believe we have a loop that has to be closed in the report. We make a specific recommendation that PDPs should include provision for reviewing them to see if they're working. But there is no way other than a new full-blown PDP of making what might be a minor adjustment in the outcome of a previous PDP if it proves not to be working. Now, in some cases, making that minor change is going to be controversial, and there's no other way to do it other than a PDP process. But in the off chance that there is a change that can be made that all parties agree to, or sufficient parties to get a supermajority of council, there should be a process by which that can be done. Otherwise, we have a loop that is not closed. We're recommending that things be monitored with absolutely no way to use the outcome of that process, other than a full PDP, which all of us know is a rather onerous thing to do. And that was the intent. I don't think we're going to come to closure now, but I think it needs to be put on council's to-do list to address sooner than the next full revision of the PDP process.
I actually think the option to do it is there, but I put myself in the queue for later.
I'm done. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Alan. So just if I could weigh in on this, I think it's interesting. It does kind of answer the question of what happens next when we discuss the PDP review, because we did say that, you know, PDP should have metrics and PDP should be reviewed for their effectiveness, but we didn't really elaborate on what should be done if they're found to be ineffective or going off course. But my reaction to this, you know, seeing it for the first time, my initial reaction is that this would be great, and this would be something that I would put into, you know, my own business or my own team, but I'm a little nervous about saying that this should be a formal part of an ICANN policy development process for two reasons. One is it either puts the material authority to change a policy in the hands of a small group after the fact outside of a PDP, or two, you have to, in the original PDP, you would have to build a lot of trap doors for later adjustments, and it feels like signing statements or other sort of kind of side agreements that could, for a PDP that could be abused. So while I agree in principle and in concept, Alan, with what you're saying, I'm just a little nervous about saying that, yes, this is something we should charge off and do. So that's, But I agree with you that there is a void in that we've said that a PVP should be reviewed for its effectiveness, but then we don't really prescribe what happens if it fails that review. Aubrey, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I'm actually going to disagree and say that we've already put the tools in the toolkit for doing this if it's what the council and the working group want to do in the PDP. In other words, and we've already seen, you can put in the original plan for the PDP and its milestones that they will deliver, and then they will stick around and they can do other stuff. We've now seen in practice how a working group can deliver a final report on one topic and keep working on others. We've seen how a working group can come and have finished the work, but in their report say, and we think that this group needs to remain perhaps in low-level observer monitoring mode and perhaps make other recommendations later. So in other words, you can deliver on the product of the PDP and use the mechanisms that exist to create a long review and propose mechanism on a case-by-case basis if that's what the council wants to do. So I think the tools to do it are there, and if over time we find people doing it a lot and it working, then people can amend the process. But I think that in an ad hoc way it can already be done. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Aubrey. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I disagree, and I'll give an example. If you look at the domain tasting one, we put in the PDP recommended, I believe, a 5% limit on the number of ad grace period deletes that could be done. Ad grace period. Let's say after you using the process for a while, we found out that registrars had a real operational problem with the 5% number, but we believed 7 would have been fine. Now, if there was significant pushback on that, and parts of the GNSO, that is, stakeholder groups, said, no damn way, then we would have no resort but to go to a PDP. But if everyone looked at the numbers and said, yeah, I think we could all live with 7, then that's an adjustment that could be made, which I disagree with Avery. I don't think there's any other way to change that 5 to a 7 other than a full-blown PDP. And yet, if all parties agreed, then it's something. Now, yes, if we had written that carefully, knowing that was going to be the problem, and said the number may be varied on council's wish or someone's wish afterwards, if we're prescient enough to know what the problem was going to be, we might have been able to address it in a vague, slightly more vaguer stated recommendation. But in this kind of case, there is no process by which we can change that 5 to a 7, even if everyone says, yes, I agree, other than going through a full PDP process with all of the periods and time that elapsed that it would take. That's the kind of example I'm talking about. If we can't come to closure and agree on something, then a PDP is the only answer. But if we can agree, there should be an alternative to implement relatively minor changes. Okay, I've done my part. I'll leave it up to the group now to decide whether there's merit or not. And thank you.
Okay, Aubrey, do you mind if I defer to Marika real quickly and then we'll come back to you?
Certainly, I don't mind.
Okay, thanks, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I recall that we had the same discussion in talking about indeed making changes to outcomes of a PDP or how to go back. And indeed, there was no agreement on making that shorter. But I think the assumption in that discussion or the conclusion was as well that if indeed there would be agreement that 7 is the right number, it presumably would go really fast. You'll still need to have, you know, an issue report and a public comment period. But the assumption is then you don't need weeks of working group discussion if everyone agrees that 7 is the right number. You can produce, you know, initial report and a final report in really short time frames. You still need to do the public comment period, but I think that's a requirement that's inherent if you, you know, make changes to consensus policies where, you know, there is a requirement under the bylaws that there has been public consultation and people have had an opportunity to provide input. And if I recall well, I think that was the conclusion from that discussion in saying, no, we don't want to have a specific process, but our assumption is if there's indeed a really wide agreement that a certain change, even if it's small, needs to be made, that should go pretty fast, you know, even taking into account that you need to have a certain number of public comment periods and certain, you know, products that need to be produced. And that's my recollection from the discussion we had in the working group on this issue.
Okay, Marika, and I think that what you're saying there kind of supports what Aubrey was saying, is that we have this capability already if we choose to exercise it in some fashion or another. Go ahead, Aubrey.
Yeah, thanks. Just to quickly give the counterexample to the one Alan gave. In that PDP, we asked the staff to report periodically on how it was going, et cetera, over the course of a year. Had we thought at that time to say, the working group will now go dormant, it and the council will receive periodic reports over the next thing, it will do its metric work at a certain point, and it will submit an evaluation to the council in a year's time on whether any further work is needed. That can be the outcome of a PDP. The working group goes dormant but hasn't actually gone away, and it can. There's nothing in the rules we've got now, as far as I can tell, that prohibits that kind of action. And that's what I meant about the tools existing ad hoc, that if we want to define that kind of mechanism on a per PDP basis, I believe the tools exist that would allow it. Thanks.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of hands go up during the course of your discussion there. So can we close the queue here and just get these last comments on and then decide how we want to respond? So, Alan, if we could go to Marika first.
Sure.
Okay, Marika.
This is Marika. You know, I agree with Aubrey that you can write that in, but probably still at the time, if that group then comes back and say, oh, well, you know, yes, we got it wrong and there needs to be a change, I'm assuming, and, you know, I'm not a lawyer here, so I might be wrong, but I'm still assuming then at that stage you would still need a PDP because you're making a change to a consensus policy. And under the bylaws, you would need to follow the PDP process. So, you can build in a mechanism whereby you request a working group to review and assess whether indeed the policy is working as intended, or maybe recommend changes, but presumably you would still need to go through a PDP to actually enforce that change to make sure you've, you know, ticked all the boxes that, you know, require a PDP.
I agree, Marika, particularly if the change or if the PDP or the change results in something that's going to change a contractual obligation on the part of contracted parties, and the PDP is the only mechanism to do that. Thanks, Alan. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, I was going to say something similar in a somewhat different way. I was going to ask the question that if we interpreted our PDP rules to mean after board approval, we could loop back and the working group could do something again and the GNSO can approve it a second time and the board approve it a second time without going back to the very start of the process, then it would certainly satisfy what I'm talking about. I would have suspected that contracted parties would not accept that as consensus policy under how the bylaws are currently written. If I'm wrong and, you know, you and David and Paul are happy to have that be part of an understood process, then there's no issue at all. But I didn't think that was the case. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm not for certain, but it sounds like that is something that a good portion of contracting parties would not consider to be a consensus policy. So let me see if I can encapsulate, and we've got a couple of diverging thoughts here, so let me see if I get them all and do them all justice, and I'm sure I'm going to fail at all that. So if I see a number of hands go up, you'll know I'm that wrong. So, I think that the concept is interesting. It points out an absence in our original report, which is that we have a review and that the review process is measuring the effectiveness of a PDP against previously established success metrics. And that, but if that falls short, then what? Do we have the mechanisms already in place? Can we send through something if there's agreement? Will it just naturally be a fast-track process that everyone agrees on at the outset? Or does it require some sort of process outside of the existing PDP to tweak or to adjust the outcomes of a previous PDP if everyone is in unanimous agreement? And I think that the things that we're hearing are that we already have this ability, that we don't need this ability, or that we cannot use this ability because it wouldn't count as a consensus policy. I think those are the three possible general tacks I hear being taken. I don't know, Marika. What have you captured so far?
I think about the same things as you mentioned.
Okay.
I'll note I'm the only one arguing for it. It's Alan, so I think I've lost this one.
Well, no, I think you pointed out an important point, but I just think that, you know, there is a void there. I just think that it's probably a little late in the game to develop something out of whole cloth to fill that void, and I think that we should at least allow this to happen once in the real world before we can stop this all. That's my personal thing.
James, just for a second, that's why I didn't suggest that we fix it. I suggest that we highlight to council that there is a loop that needs to be closed, perhaps before waiting for a full review.
You know, I think at a minimum we can at least point out that this, I think that we all agree that it's the policy that we developed, that the final report is not clear on what happens next if a review fails. There's not a specific course of action laid out from that, and I think if everyone can agree on that, then we can just acknowledge that this is a blank spot and move on. I see Alex is giving us a thumbs up. Oh, got lots of thumbs up on that one. Okay, great. Margie?
Yeah, this is Margie. One thing that maybe you'd want to consider is if the change is something that you'd want to happen before implementation or after implementation. In other words, if you just, for example, take a look at the new GTLD program and say there was something that was, you know, being implemented in a way that wasn't necessarily what the working group had thought, you know, was appropriate, do you still think that the full-blown PDP needs to take place to address that, or is it something that because it hasn't been implemented yet, you might think a truncated process would work? In other words, you wouldn't have to go through the full preliminary issue report, public comment, final issue report, you know, working group, and then, you know, and then recommendations. I don't know. It's just something to consider.
Yeah. Okay. Good point.
And this is Rick. I'm just very quickly looking, because I do recall that we did discuss it, but I'm not remembering anymore now if we actually wrote something in there that clarified that. Because we do have under amendments or modifications of approved policies, just going to look here, there are a couple of ways that it can be done prior to the final approval by the ICANN board. So it's actually before what we've now in the report would be before the board actually approves it. So not prior to implementation, but actually before the board approves it. So it would be at that point that the council or the working group realizes that there's something wrong. And in that case, we do foresee now in the report that the PDP working can be revened or reformed and should be consulted, that there should be proposed amendments or modification posts for public comment, and the Genius or Council would have to approve those amendments or modifications with a supermajority. So we do have I don't think it's exactly what Alan was looking for, but we do have something in there that, you know, that you could change the policy before the board approves it. So that is in there.
Okay. Alan, I see your hand. I really want us to try and move off of this one.
No, I was just agreeing with Marika that that does cover it before board approval. That was not my issue. Thank you.
Right. Your issue was, you know, after board approval, after implementation, in some case maybe even a year down the road, if I understand your comment correctly. Okay, so I think that we had a pretty spirited discussion here, but in the end we want to say something to the effect that acknowledges that we don't really have a prescribed step after the review takes place, and maybe this is something that, if and when this occurs in the real world, that council should take a look at and possibly is fodder for the next iteration of this review and reform team. Okay, moving on to number 15. Marika, if you could read the set the stage for us here.
Yes, section 15 relates to time frames for the initiation of a PDP. So So INTA makes a comment saying, INTA remains concerned that codifying this practice may result in additional delays. Discretion should be limited in terms of allowing for these delays.
Okay, and by delays they mean the...
this is a request to defer a vote of a consideration of an initiation of a PDP for one council meeting.
Okay. And I think that when they say discretion should be limited, I think that we covered this concern by saying that it could be deferred once and only once. You know, maybe I'm misremembering, but I think that, you know, the practice had been that, you know, councillors could defer this for any reason. We've just put this into writing. But we've also, we have put some limitations on this, correct? I mean, the same councillor couldn't come up again and again and defer and defer and defer and postpone a vote indefinitely. So it seems like we did limit the discretion in that regard. But it's been a while since I've seen our report. So what was our recommendation in this area? Alan, go ahead. Oh, Alan's got a thumbs up, not a hand.
Yeah, no, I was just saying that I think we did limit it as best as we could and still allow the flexibility council needs to make a reasoned decision.
Okay. So I think the response then, if we're remembering this correctly, is that the discretion was limited. In fact, in the ad hoc arrangement that existed prior to codifying this, the discretion was much less limited. So I think we've made it better. By INTA's to we've improved it in the context of INTA's concern. Does everyone kind of agree with that, or am I the only one remembering it that way? No, it looks like Paul in the chat. Okay. All right. Well, then let's look at the second comment, Rika.
So the second comment is from Alan. This recommendation allows any voting council member to request deferral, excluding the non-voting nominating committee appointee to the GNSO council. Since the deferral is a request to not only defer voting, but to defer discussion, it is reasonable that this NCA, whose only tool is discussion, be able to make a deferral request to allow him or her to further study the issue.
I hate to go back and reopen this, but I remember specifically we had a very spirited and lengthy conversation about the voting versus non-voting members and the hazards of allowing non-voting members to defer. And I would hate to reopen that, but I do remember that that was by design. That was not an oversight. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, I'll point out one of the rationales for that was to make it clear that the liaisons cannot ask for a deferral. And liaisons are not council members according to the bylaws. The only council members are ones representing stakeholder groups and the three NCAs. So this is a very targeted statement aimed at, in particular at one council member who already is disenfranchised in not being able to vote, and we're taking away another privilege of that NCA, and it's the only place in our whole set of rules we do that. And I think it's insulting with no real benefit in it, since we're not only deferring voting, we're also deferring discussion, because our words say we defer addressing the issue. And I just feel that's inappropriate. I know Avery, when she heard about it, said she realized that she hadn't been there at the discussion and would disagree. I don't know if she wants to. Well, she has her have her hand up, so I'll let her speak. I just think it's adding insult to injury, effectively, with no real gain, and it's instituting something in bylaws, which I think just shows bad taste. Thank you.
Okay, Aubrey, next.
Yeah, I want to endorse what Alan said, although I think his language was by far too mild on it. It's part of this whole campaign that stakeholder groups, and yes, I know I'm in a stakeholder group now, but at least mine isn't trying to do this, of devaluing the role of the NomCom appointees in GNSO, and I think it's despicable. Thanks.
I put myself in the queue with a question. Is the concern that, let me see if I'm understanding this correctly. Is the concern that the non-com appointees will not be able to execute a deferral if they're the only one wishing to defer the issue, or is the concern that someone will defer an issue over the objection of a non-com employee? I think it's the first one, right?
It's the first one. No one can object to a request for a deferral. We've codified that a request from a single council member will be honored once.
And it
effectively stops any discussion at that meeting.
And the non-com appointee is a full council member who, as Alan says, their only right is to discuss. So for them to basically be you know, told, sorry, you can't demand that we discuss this further, it really deprecates their role even more. We've taken away their vote, and now we've taken away the only tool they have, discussion.
Yeah, and we are allowing the two NOMCOM appointees in the houses to make this request because they'd have a vote.
Well, so I have a question. Are we deferring all discussion? Are we deferring any appearance on the agenda, or are we deferring just the vote? Because I thought we were deferring the vote of an issue, but you're saying that we've it's been a few months since I've looked at this report, so...
By deferring a vote, we're allowing another month of discussion.
Well, and the words actually say defer discussion, defer addressing the issue. I think, I'm not sure the exact words, Marika can check, or maybe they're on the left-hand column, but it basically says defer, you know, let's stop talking about this, go on to the next agenda item, and we'll come back to this next month.
Okay. Paul put something in the chat here. Paul, maybe can you, I'm having trouble following the chat and the conversation. Would you want to maybe read that for us?
Yes, sure, James. I was just pulling up the report and clipping the first instance I saw where we explicitly talk about limiting discussion, the deferral options, et cetera. It was recommendation 16. So I just clipped the language and threw it in there. But quite honestly, I'm still going through the report. I think there are other places that we also discuss deferral. This 16 is specifically referring to the launching of a PDP.
It's saying deferral of consideration, which I think is being to the discussion.
I would probably agree with that, Alan. And like I said, I think we also, I'm still looking for other instances, I think, that we address this idea of deferral, discussion, voting, et cetera. I just haven't found it yet.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Okay. Well, it sounds like this one is something we did. Let me just see if I can encapsulate what we're discussing here. It sounds like something that we possibly goes beyond just a review of a comment and addressing it. It sounds like something where we need to get the working group on the same page before we can hope to do that. So can I make a request that we put this recommendation 16 and the issue of who is eligible to defer an issue on council, that we put that to the list and we start to feel out some of the different, see if we can get some of the different positions into writing and that folks can take a look at. I mean, I don't know if this is just a fixing of the language or if this is a material change to what we consider to be a voting council member. Or if we can just, just kind of tweak the recommendation, or if this is something that needs a wholesale rewrite. I don't know. I think this one needs to go under a microscope a little bit more, and I'm hesitant to do that in our, in our scarce time that we have on the phone. So rather than writing up a response, I would ask Marika to, kind of capture this last few minutes here onto a message to the list that we can start a discussion thread on that. And Alan, maybe actually we could save Marika some work here, Alan, if you would want to take the lead on getting this one to the list and then something we can, and maybe Jeff might weigh on in this as well.
Consider it done.
Okay. Okay, thank you. And then, so let's just put a placeholder there. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, it is Marika, because my question was actually, is there anyone on the call that's opposing, opposed to this change? Because I know, indeed, we had a discussion, indeed, on maybe not extending it to liaisons, and there were concerns maybe in relation to that, but should we already see as well if anyone is opposed that is on the call today to this change? So we can give an indication as well on the discussion on the mailing list and saying, well, on the call, people seem supportive, or these and these comments were made, you know, against this potential change that might help facilitate people expressing whether they support or are against a change like that.
I'll just answer that real quickly. It's not that I'm opposed to the change. It's just that I feel like I would like to defer the discussion just because I don't feel prepared to, answer. I don't think I'm opposed to it. I think I support it, but I'm not sure. I want to make sure that we're just fixing something and not making a wholesale change to the recommendation. And then, you know, I mean, I think if this were the context of our regular PDP calls, if this were happening in April, I would be right there with Alan and Aubrey, but we're pretty far down the road from there now, and I want to make sure that this is something that we just overlooked versus something that we really are, changing the landscape with this. So that's just my concern. It's not an opposition. It's just
let's go on. I'll address that issue in my comment on the list.
Okay. Thanks, Alan. Appreciate you getting that on the list, and then we can have a more in-depth discussion. Can we move on to number 20 on page 9?
Yes, it is. It's Marika. Recommendation 20 relates to input from supporting organizations and advisory committees. The comment from INTA saying that a request that additional language be added explaining how to best involve the ACs and SOs in a PDP. In addition to explaining how input should be sought, details should be included for the manner and time frame in which the working group should respond to AC and SO comments.
Okay, thank you. And Alan, you indicated here that you agree in general, but feel this is going to be an evolving process.
I think we're going to have to learn how to do it better, and I don't think us sitting on high are going to have the right method.
Yeah, I tend to agree, and I see Paul agrees as well. So, I think if we can craft that into a response that we agree with the principle that INTA is raising here and think that that's going to be part of an ongoing process to improve the PDP and make sure that it's supported by the SOs and ACs.
I mean, we all know how difficult it is to get active participation.
Yeah. Yeah, here's one way. Show up. Okay.
Touche.
Move on to number 23. I'm sorry, Marika, did you get that? I think just some elaboration of Alan's point here is that, you know, good
right,
idea.
Right, and this, Marika, maybe something you might want to add as well, that, of course, you know, if you put a time, manner, and time frame, it depends as well on the comments received. If, you know, you get a comment saying, this is great, it's very easy for a working group to say, oh, well, thank you very much. But if, you know, it's 20 pages of very detailed comments, it's going to take a long time for a working group to dive into and respond to all those comments. So I'm not really sure whether indeed it's possible to set a one-size-fits-all kind of a framework for that.
Right. Okay. So number 23, a second comment on that page, please.
So 23, recommendation 23 relates to the mode of operation for a PDP. This is a recommendation where we're talking about that the working group is the basic mode, but there might be flexibility. So there's a comment from INTA, the recommendation should clarify who may or who is responsible for suggesting and developing such alternate processes as well as approvals required. Relying on GNSO Council discretion is insufficient to address the concerns raised. And I do believe we discussed it on the last call, because there is specific language on what is required and how this should be done, but I can try to find that while you all discuss.
Yeah. Alan, you want to just kind of run us through your response here, and then we'll dive into this as a group.
Yeah, I mean, the comment there was simply allowing other methods And the last discussion we had was in response to the registry statement. We're simply allowing them. We are not forbidding them, but there will have to be due process. And you know, it's only going to get into the GNSO operating rules if we come up with something that satisfies all of the stakeholder groups and the board. And I'm not sure how much more due process we need than that. I can't imagine who else, what other god we're going to go to, since, you know, the GNSO almost always goes out to public comment on these kind of things. The board may well do it also, should they choose. You know, our wording was simply saying that we may not be omnipresent, all-knowing, and there may be something down the road that's a better alternative than the working group, and we're not forbidding it. I'm not sure how we can put any more rules into place about the future that we don't understand, other than saying everyone and their brother have to approve it before it happens.
Okay. I think that this is something that was pretty extensively discussed, and I think that we did leave somewhat of a placeholder in there, you know, to allow for council discretion. Sorry, I'm just kind of chiming in on my own capacity here. And Marika's pasted some text in the chat as well. And I think I generally agree with you, Alan. I think we wanted to leave some flexibility, but we mentioned that, you know, before you charge off and invent something new, it has to, you know, some new structure, it has to, you know, the rules and procedures have to be understood in advance. So I think in general, the answer is that, you know, probably that council shouldn't be doing this as a matter of practice, but only in those exceptional cases and possibly... I think the contracted parties might say possibly whenever there's no concern that it would actually result in a change to consensus policy, but it might be like, for example, a pre-PDP or some other task force. But I think there's probably a response there given what you are saying and given what Marika has posted from the report into the chat. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, something not for the formal response. To be quite candid, we have made it almost impossible for this to happen, that something
right.
Will place working groups. We've put hurdles in front of it such that it is almost unimaginable that within ICANN structure and the GNSO structure, this is going to happen in our lifetimes. So
right. We've also ruled
we
it out.
We need to make it any stronger.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think this is more of just a nod of respect to the idea that the council makes the rules, the council manages the process, so the council could change the process, but we've made it, but we need certainty in the process. We need some confidence in the process. So therefore, we've made it very, 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 very difficult and probably, like you said, practically impossible to do that, but more acknowledging that it is.
But all we're doing is not forbidding it.
It's not forbidding it, right.
We're not facilitating it, surely.
Okay, so I think we're kind of, we're all in agreement there. I don't know if that's sufficient to generate a response, Marika. But I think that we, you know, as far as what INTA is asking for, I think that we have done that, we've gone over and above beyond what they're just saying. We've really made that a difficult path.
Yeah, they're asking us to clarify who is responsible. We already have, by saying it's the GNSO working rules, which implies the GNSO with board oversight has to approve it. But we can restate that in our answer to the comment, to, you know, if in case they haven't read it properly.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, let's move on then to page 10, number 28.
So this is Marika, this recommendation 28 relates to the summary and analysis of public comments, and there it's proposed that the summary and analysis should be provided by the staff manager at the latest 30 days after the closing of the public comment period, absent exigent circumstances, and INTA comments that a delay should be avoided by defining and limiting exigent circumstances.
Okay, and Alan's response is exigent is already a pretty strong word. We'll go to Paul next.
Yeah, thanks, James. Totally agree with Alan here. I don't think we should be trying to define something like this. We can't anticipate a circumstance that we would attach the word exigent to already. If we try and get so prescriptive per the INTA's request, we're going to wind up boxing in our ability to respond or to, for the processes to move forward. I mean, leave it, like Alan said, keep it simple, leave it alone.
I agree with Alan. I agree with Paul. Sorry. But yeah, I like the checkbox. It's better than the thumbs up, by the way. It was green and red. It was easier to see. Okay, number 29 from the registries.
Is recommendation 29 relates to the guidance on public comment periods, and the registry stakeholder group says, in cases where few comments are received, it may be realistic for the working group to respond to every public comment. But when there are large numbers, it would be time-consuming and not realistic to expect the working group to respond to every single comment. Suggests changing the recommendation to read, encouraging working groups to explain their rationale for agreeing or disagreeing with the main themes of the comments received. So basically changing different comments to the main themes.
I'll put myself in the queue, but I wanted to see if anyone wanted to go first. Avery, go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily want to go first. I think that, yeah, we need to distinguish between addressing the substance of every comment and addressing every comment individually. I believe that we have to address the substance of every comment. I don't necessarily think that we need a individual answer for, you know, each and every one of each and every commenter's points. And so where that balances and how it gets said, you know, I think it's indeed right. If there are 10 comments that all say the same thing, one answer should suffice. So, you know, kind of like being done here, that there's topics, there's who made the comments, and then there's a general answer. I think that works. And that I think we have to do. But certainly individually answering each one, other than a response to fellow organizations or such, I don't think so. So I'm not sure. It may be a word difference or something.
Okay. Thanks, Avery. I'll go ahead and jump in and say, you know, well said, and I agree with that. You know, if you can organize it so that, you know, 8 commenters, you know, raised a particular issue, that you should respond to that issue. If one commenter raised an issue, you should respond. You should respond to the issues being raised by the comments, not the individual commenters. Again, unless it's some organization requesting a specific response. So I tend to agree with that as a response, and I think that in fact in larger comments received, I think, you know, I'm going back to some of the early versions of the draft applicant guidebook. You know, that's the only practical way that someone the organization could hope to manage the feedback that it was receiving. Alan, can we go to Margie first?
You can. I was just going to suggest removing the word different, and I think that addresses the issue, but go ahead.
I'll
take my hand down.
Oh, okay. Thank you. This is Margie. I just completed the public comment summary for the preliminary issue report, and my summary is 30 pages long. There was a tremendous amount of items that were submitted in the public comment period. Some of it was duplicative. Some of it wasn't. I think my... You know, having just spent the time doing that, I would caution against requiring a comment to response to every comment, because a lot of times you'll find, someone that maybe doesn't understand the issue and goes off on a random, point that really, isn't even, affecting the issue at hand. So, as an example, in the UDRP comments, there was somebody that was complaining about a specific provider's practices, and it really had no bearing on the issue itself. It was more like, I can't terminate these guys or something like that. And so I'd rather not see a strict rule that every comment has to be responded to, but something more generic about, you know, most, you know, the themes that are picked up in the public comment period are addressed, you know, in some way, but not be specific to each comment, because it might just provide extra work that really isn't even relevant to the topic itself.
Okay, thanks, Margie. And I think that is in general agreement with what we're saying thus far. I would want to point out, and I think I'm correct in this observation, is that there's a distinction, although it might be a fairly meaningless and subtle distinction, but there is a distinction between staff commenting on or summarizing the comments versus the working group responding to the comments in their report. And I think that with this particular topic or recommendation, we're talking about the latter, where the working group is actually responding to the comments that were raised and summarized by staff. I don't know if that matters, but I do think they're separate functions, although they probably have the same concerns and the same same issues. Let's go to Alex and then Marika.
Yeah, thank you. Alex speaking. It's the same as Margie has just said. I'm concerned with that requiring or impending requirement that overload working groups with a burden to provide custom responses to every comment. And it may actually, there are two possible outcomes to this. It may make the work group work inoperable. It may, you know, just make their work impossible to perform because they have to provide lots and lots of responses in a certain predefined format. The second bit is that can actually be used to game the system. When you find a certain work group is doing something which you don't like, you could come up with lots of comments that require very specific details, and you could cite this very requirement to derail the policy development process. So there's a downside to it. So I think it should be less flexible so that the work group can deliver the results within the shortest time possible, and so long as they address the issues. Maybe it should be up to you to point where they didn't address you as not to demand that they give you a custom responses to every comment you raise. Thanks.
Thank you, Alex. And those are very good thoughts. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to confirm indeed what you said, that this recommendation itself specifically relates to the PDP work team analysis of the comments. And I've posted in the chat the language that's currently in the PDP manual, and I think indeed it's worth for the work team to look at that, because indeed I've actually interpreted the different comments in a broader way, not taking it as each single comment that has been submitted, but you know, each comment can as well have different themes, and like we do here, we've broken them down and addressed those different themes or specific comments in relation to recommendations, you know, throughout a scheme like this. So if this is being interpreted that we need to, you know, a working team needs to address each single comment in a certain way, I think indeed we need to build in more flexibility. One thing to note as well, and you know, partly this is of course related as well to the staff analysis of public comments, because as it currently works, most of the time the staff analysis or summary is the basis on which the PDP work team bases its analysis. Because, you know, for example, what you see here is almost similar or identical to what was also in the summary document. Of course, you know, I always ask work teams if, you know, if they feel that comments are missing or, you know, certain elements have been mischaracterized or not appropriately summarized, you know, work team can change that. But, you know, there is a link, but specific comments relates to that. And I think, yeah, we need to make sure that it is not limiting the way work, or the, you know, not limiting the work team and how it reviews the comments received, and not requiring certain things that, you know, practice either won't happen or won't make much sense.
Okay, thank you. I think we're coalescing around some common themes here that will serve a response. Alan, I see your hand. Is this a real quick one?
Yeah, in reading it, I think we have given us flexibility, both staff and then the working group, and the only different is the only word that seems to imply a response is owed per comment. And as I said, taking out the word different, I think puts the generality back into it and gives staff and the working group the discretion to answer it as they deem appropriate. Thank you.
think James has problems unmuting. Maybe I'll take over. Okay, I'll read the next one because I don't think there were any further hands up. So the next one relates to recommendation 37, timing of consideration of the final report. This also relates to codifying the practice of any voting member can request a deferral of consideration of the final report. So the registry stakeholder group comments here, allowing as late as 8 days before a council meeting for considering a final report is completely unworkable. And if I can maybe comment first, because this is actually a rule that's in the operating procedures, and it's not something I think that the PDP work team has prescribed. James, are you ready?
Yes, I'm back. Sorry about that.
Good.
Okay, so so that you're saying that this is coming from a different document. This was not part of our final report. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. It's currently in the operating rules. I mean, presumably this group could make a recommendation to have that changed, but my guess is that would have to go through the standing committee to recommend a change there, because it's not part, or I don't know, maybe asking Margie as well, I don't know if we could write a different rule here and saying if it relates to a PDP and it is a final report, it should be delivered, 2 weeks or 3 weeks in advance of a council meeting, and the rule that's currently in the operating rules doesn't apply here. I don't know if that's another option, if people would feel strongly that this should be changed, but
well,
I said I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not sure what is the approach.
Well, we shouldn't, so maybe we can, if I'm understanding correctly, the registries are just saying that window is just too tight up to the council meeting. And I think that we might agree with that, but I think if they're pointing out that we missed an opportunity to fix something in the operating manual, then maybe we should acknowledge that and then refer that to either follow-up work or to the standing committee. Alan, go ahead.
Margie had her hand up first.
Oh, sorry, Margie first.
I agree with Marika that if we feel that there should be more time here, let's just go ahead and include whatever the recommendation is here, and then we can deal with inconsistencies in the operating rules separately, and as staff we can, encourage the standing committee to look at it. But I think, if this group is strong on what position they'd like with respect to this issue, let's clarify it now.
Okay, Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, in a private chat with Avery on another meeting, she asked, has there been any decision in the last year or two where council hasn't deferred the vote? And that's not quite reality, but it's close. We instituted the rule that you have to have things in council at least 8 days before to get on the agenda. And people have been using that more often than not to say, we're going to try to force a vote on something that hasn't been discussed at all. And in the last couple of meetings, we've seen more of a trend to say, if this is going to be something that requires substantive stakeholder group review, you really got to give them enough time. And Pedner, I think, is one of the first ones we did it on, that it actually got voted on the first time the vote came up. There had been substantive review for several meetings before, but it didn't come up for a vote until it had been discussed. And I think that's more an issue for good council management than the rules. I don't think the working group rules can say you have to bring something up a month ahead of time before it can get on the agenda at all. And so I think we have a good balance right now. And with better practices, we're going to see fewer things being deferred, I think, because we will be encouraging discussion and reasonable time for consideration within the stakeholder groups before forcing a vote. But I think you can't substitute – I don't think you can substitute rules for good management. And I think that's where we are right now.
Okay, and I tend to agree. Margie, is that an old hand or?
Yeah, sorry, it's an old hand.
Okay. So, Marika, new hand.
Yeah, I'm just trying to write notes. So if I understood correctly, the work team is saying that there is already sufficient flexibility with the one meeting deferral, so there's no need to change this. Did I understand that correctly?
Well, I think there's, and Alan is adding a little bit more as well, is saying that, you know, in effect, that that is the practice, and that this concern gets to just effective management of the council's ability to manage its own operations, and therefore probably beyond what can be codified in the rules. Is that a good synopsis, Alan, or did I miss?
Yeah, I mean, the 8 days is there as a minimum. It doesn't say you have to come up with a substantive motion that you expect to vote on only 8 days ahead of time. You can do it in advance. And
right.
People should not be putting motions up on substantive issues on short term.
Well,
and I know,
well, you know, I mean, another
I
way
know because
look
of
it
Jazz, we've had a number of things come up on very short timing and the board making other requests on council on very short type timelines. But that shouldn't be the norm just because we've had some abuse of the situation.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. And I didn't mean to speak over you there. I was just going to say that, you know, this is exactly why, or one of the, this cuts to the heart of the purpose of having a one meeting deferral. And if no one defers on an issue that comes in 8 days before a council meeting, then it must be one of those issues that everyone is just completely, you know, unanimous in their support or their objection or whatever, and so, or non-controversial, and so, you know, then now we're back into an opportunity to streamline the time frame for something like that. So I think this is something that we should probably just leave to the discretion of council. Aubrey?
Yeah, hi, I totally agree. I think the other thing is that 8 days is largely, or should be largely enough, depending on how things structure themselves. So that's why it requires a request. And by the way, we have softened, we have made the request easier. And when it first started, it was a stakeholder group or a constituency could ask for the deferral. We have actually made it easier by saying an individual could ask it. So I disagree, not that I want to change anything, but I disagree that we've made it harder, we've made it easier, and it was always just once. I don't think it's happened more than once. If it has, it's been very rarely. I don't think that it means that it's an issue everybody agrees on. It just means that it's an issue that every group had a chance to talk and has made its determination on. Within NCSG practice, by and large, and in fact, we haven't asked for the deferral as often as I think some others, by and large, we've had our discussion, and since our council members vote their own conscience based on the discussions they've heard, it can go forward. Sometimes we can't, and it needs more discussion. So I don't think we can make any determination that it's easier, that there's consensus, or there's whatever. It's just that there has been enough time, and I think Alan is totally right. If, you know, you've prepared the ground for it before the motion and spent two meetings talking about it, then maybe he won't defer it. But, of course, the elapsed time is the same. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Aubrey. I think that we've got, beaten that one to death a little bit. We're all violently agreeing with each other. So can we move to the next one? Marika, deferral, I'll just go ahead and read it. Deferral should only apply to the consideration of the final report, and any deferral relating to the initiation of a PDP should require a second. I think Alan is saying he disagrees. It adds delays, but reason consideration is needed. Paul, go ahead, and I'll put myself in the queue as well.
Yeah, thanks, James. I strongly agree with Alan, i.e., I disagree with Vince's comment, and I think Alan's response is perfect for our response to them.
Okay, thanks, Paul. And I strongly agree with Paul, who strongly agrees with Alan, who strongly disagrees with INTA. So can we just make that our response? Any disagreements, I guess, would be the question. Okay. Let's move on to the next one here. We've got about a little more than 10 minutes remaining in our time, and this is a big one. So if we can at least maybe just, you know, take a first bite out of this one, I think that will leave us at a good starting spot for Mr. Newman's triumphant return next week.
So recommendation 38 is in regard relates to the consideration of working group recommendations by the GNSO Council. So the registry stakeholder group recommends two changes to this recommendation. They first suggest to add a sentence before the last sentence, noting that the Council, in its policy process management role, should cautiously handle and any reconsideration of working group recommendations to ensure that the working group does not get the impression that their work was in vain. If the Council thinks that a particular recommendation does not have support from any particular group, it should determine whether that group's input was reflected in the final recommendation. And the second recommended change is change the word encourage to require in the last sentence. So then it would read, the PDP work team would like to require the GNSO Council that where it does have concerns or would propose change to recommendations, it passes these concerns and the recommendations for changes back to the respective PDP working group for their input.
Okay, and Alan, you had an initial response here that you think that this comment is a bit strong and is in the context of IRTBB. Can you elaborate your comment very quickly, please?
Yeah, I agree, you know, that council shouldn't be rethinking the whole issue, but there have been times in the past where issues have been raised in council and a little bit of discussion with the chair of the working group, who may or may not discuss it with some others, say yes, some minor changes are okay. And, you know, in fact, again, on to talk about Pedner, you know, so when it was discussed first time informally in council, you know, someone raised an issue that we just have something wrong. I don't remember what it was, but Chuck Gomes identified something which was just stupid, and it required a minor change in the words. And it's not clear that we need to go all the way back to a formal working group to fix that kind of thing. So I think we need flexibility and reasonableness.
Okay. Marika, you're up next.
Yeah, this is Marika. I completely agree with Alan, and I think, you know, for example, in the Pender case, that change was cycled back to the working group, even though it was, you know, relatively short notice. An email did go out to the group saying, look, this change has been proposed. You know, the chair thinks, you know, it's not a substantive change, and what we originally had there didn't make sense. Does anyone have any objections? You know, please let us know now, and otherwise we'll, you know, we assume that the working group is agreed with that change. I mean, something in the recommendation that we might consider changing is, because we're now saying, or we propose changes to recommendations, maybe the word substantive is, you know, required there to make sure that it relates to really, you know, substantive changes to recommendations, not, you know, just a word because, you know, there was a spelling mistake in one of the recommendations, or indeed a thing that, you know, it's obvious when you look at it that everyone agrees that that is a, you know, it wasn't intended like that, that those kind of changes shouldn't, you know, require or be encouraged to really take it all the way back. So I don't know if that's an addition that might help, or just something for the work team to consider.
Okay, thank you, Marika. I put myself in the queue. I think I'm going to go in the direction of Alan here and say that this is probably, you know, it's a good point, but it's something that I think that we've covered and we want to leave more general. I think that IRTPB issue incident does leave folks, I know it ruffled a lot of feathers, let's put it that way. But I think that can be handled on a situational basis. I don't know that we have to write specific rules in there. I think that there, I'm agreeing with Alan about, you know, just having a general process involved. But you know, we should definitely keep an eye on this one, and I think we will, because this is the balance between the EDP working group that makes policy and the council that manages policy, and, you know, this is just goes right to the heart of where that line of demarcation lives. Alan, if we can
I'll be very quick. I think the word in the registry comment that I do think is good is the word cautiously, and I wouldn't mind if we ended up incorporating that into something. I think the second part of make sure the working group doesn't get the impression that no one cares is a bit over the top, but council should be cautious in making any changes or in how it handles changes, I think are, is a good word, good set of, a good word that we may want to incorporate. Thank you.
Okay. And I agree. If we haven't already expressed that sentiment, we should at least borrow that word. Okay, can we take a look? The next comment is from Inta, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And it says, it would be helpful for the council to develop standards and definitions to gauge the level of assent along these lines, strong consensus, rough consensus, no consensus. Alan notes that the intent is correct, but this is a case where the chair of the working group might be asked whether it needs to be referred back or not. I think you're referring to the Pedner issue where it was just a simple correction or a factual clarification as opposed to a material change in the recommendations. My feelings on this is that while we can agree with the with Inta's comment that it would be helpful, it would also possibly establish new formalized procedures on council and as far as you know what thresholds they would need in order to send something back to a working group. I don't know that we really need to elaborate much further beyond what Alan has in his comment. That you know we should keep this, and I think it goes back to the previous comment as well, that we should keep this as general as possible, not try to be overly prescriptive in this. But we'll take a quick cue. We've only got 5 minutes left here, so we'll take a quick cue and see if there's any objections to just noting that comment from Inta and folding it in with the response to the registries. Okay, no cues, no objections.
I'll just note that I don't think we can codify everything. We have to presume good sense, and when it doesn't prevail, react to it.
Right, and I think, you know, in some kind of lengthy and painful way, we saw this within the IRTPB incident, right? Anyway, it's a longer discussion, but I mean, I think we saw it. And that's probably a good stopping point, folks. We chewed through about, what, 4 pages of this, and it looks like about 6 pages remain. So that's a good stopping point for today. We have a couple minutes left. I hope that everybody feels good. Please watch for the thread on, I think it was it item number 23 that's going to be coming down the pipeline here pretty soon. And thanks, Alan, for taking the lead on that one. And I guess we'll say thanks. Enjoy your weekend. For those of you in the U.S., enjoy your holiday weekend for those of you in the U.S. and in Canada. And we'll talk to everybody next week, and hopefully welcome back Mr. Newman.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, James.
Okay, thanks, everyone.
Thanks.